It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What do you say? What do you say? Another edition of Advantage Connors is here today. As always, your host, Brett Connors, here with my co-host, Jimmy Connors. What are you doing up there in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, it's been a good day. And, you know, January's almost over. I mean, the days were going so quick. It's just, you know, yesterday, January 24th, was my mom's birthday. And so I was remembering that. And getting up today and getting started, it's been a busy day up here. So let's get into some interesting things, and then I'll tell you about my day. What do you want to talk about?
Happy birthday, Grandma Glow. How old would she have been?
Oh, my goodness. It's like 97.
Yeah.
Wow. The years have passed. She was almost 83 when she passed, and that was in 08. So that's 12, 13, 14. So yeah, 95, 96. Something like that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I'll be honest with you, I miss her every day still. Yeah, yeah. So, but I know she's looking over us and she's got a new visitor with her son, Johnny, that's passed away 2 months ago. And so it's getting crowded wherever they are, up or down, it's getting crowded. So, yeah. But I think about them often.
Yep, me too. I remember when she passed in 07, we went back to her funeral, and then you and I got on an airplane and headed down to Melbourne because you were coaching Andy Roddick at the time. And Andy proceeded to make the semifinals, right? Yeah.
Yes.
In 2007, yep. Had a good run there, kind of did it in grandma's name. So that was always a good memory. But let's talk some AO. Oh, before I get into the AO, there was an earthquake here last night.
Yeah.
4.3.
I was wondering if you felt that. Did you?
Oh, yeah. I happened to be awake. It was about a 4.3 earthquake hit at like 1:32 in the morning, LA.
What are you doing up at that hour?
I was just watching some tennis. Yeah, I had the tennis going on down under. It was, I kind of like, I haven't been awake for too many of them. They seem to happen at night. Usually they happen closer to sunrise because the Earth's crust is like warming up because the sun comes out. But this one was in the middle of the night. It shook so much that the whole door and there's a few things in the apartment that were shaking, and Melina popped up and Bella came running in. So I kind of think they're fun as long as nothing falls. They're kind of just, they're only 5 or 6 seconds. So you just kind of hold on and pray everything goes good. But
right. But there's so much crazy stuff happening right now. Earthquakes here and tornadoes and snowstorms and mass shootings. I mean, you know, wow. I mean, yeah, you know, you get up and you want to watch the news, but, you know, at least take a break and give me a little good news once in a while.
No, they don't like
you
that.
You know, and sometimes that's hard to find, right?
Well, that doesn't sell. You know, that doesn't keep you scared and buying pharmaceutical products that they sell you in between the commercial breaks. But we could talk about the mass shootings just for a quick second. I mean, they're all sad and they're all pathetic in their own way, but this one was even closer to home just because mom is a big dance person, loves going to the dance studio, practicing with her friends and instructor.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most recent shootings was at a dance studio. Is that right?
Yeah, it, which is true. And it was in Monterey Park. And over the weekend, we were down in that area. And because her instructor had a competition down near that, and, you know, some of, you know, the dancers from that studio were at your mom's instructor's competition. So,
oh, wow.
You know, which turned out to be, you know, it was, you know, that stuff, everything hits close to home in that respect because of, you know, the violence and the attitude of people and all that. And, you know, but, oh my, I mean, you know, I think it said that he was one of the oldest mass shooters to date. I think he was in his early 70s. Mm. And man, it's just, you know, all that stuff is, you know, with the, I mean, you get up and you just shake your head and you say, you know, what's up? What's going on? You know, what changes somebody's attitude and what drives them to do that? You know, that's above my pay grade. I'm no psychiatrist. I'm no psychologist. I'm no none of that. But I do know that anything that drives you to be that mad and to be to go over the edge like that, I can't identify with.
No.
You know, I've been mad a lot of times, Brother, and you know, on the court, off the court, and whatever. But you know, it's never, you know. So I mean, it's. I guess what do you have to look at? Is it mental?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, if he's set in his 70s, he might have. You know, who knows, some dementia or something starting, or he might be on some medication that's not acting right with him, or he might have had some loss. It's so hard to dissect what somebody's going through.
But, right. And then we'll never know because he ended up killing himself.
Yeah.
And then and then there was, you know, I think, another one or two other shootings also. You know, so I mean, it's just, wow, it's just in waves. And so what do we have to come up with? I mean, how do we have to treat this?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's a, you know, yeah, I guess that's, you know, that's what's out there on the table that, you know, those, the powers that be are trying to figure out. But I do know this. I do know that if something happens like that, there has to be some kind of punishment involved. You know, you can give them a slap on the hand and say, you know,
yeah, but
don't
who do you
it
punish?
Again. Well, that's the key, right?
Yeah.
That's the key. You know, first of all, you got to find them, you know, and then when you get them, how do you treat them? You know, because everybody's got their own way of, you know, how are you going to handle that? Do you let them out on bail? Do, you know, yeah, just let them go? You know, I mean, it's a.
Most of them end up dying is the thing. There's no one to punish most of the time. It feels like, I mean, the thing that's weird and sucks to me is how often they happen and then how quickly we become like numb to them and normalized, you know? You know, like you pointed one out, and there's just a couple other ones this weekend. So three different like mass shootings in a weekend. Like, I mean, how the fuck do you comprehend like all of that went into three separate different occasions with three different groups of people, with three different shooters? And then they're happening every week, every month. Whatever,
yeah, but Brett, you know? those are the only ones we know.
Right. That have made the news so far.
Right. Right. So it's, you know, you know, a difference that we're going through here, you know, in this country. And, you know, I guess, you know, the one thing that has to be addressed is, you know, what needs to be done to help stop this? Is it gun control? Is it mental illness? Is it, what is it that needs to be addressed to, you know, to help surround this in a way where, you know, we can cut back on this in a way, but, you know, that's above my pay grade. Yeah. You know, I'm just a guy who hit a ball against a racket. You know, if
I don't know what the answer is either. You know, that's why I think it ends up becoming like a stalemate topic every time it comes up, because like if you go one extreme, what do? Take every gun away, and you go the other extreme, then there's too many guns, you know, but then nobody really ever talks about people's mental illnesses and mental health. I know that's starting to become more of a topic the last few years, but like a lot of the times it seems like with these shooters, they'll be like on radars already, or they were in the police radar. They had been interviewed. The FBI had talked to them. This person had done that. You know, like all this shit, they've had red flags. And it's like, well, why didn't you do something? You know, why isn't there like some sort of systemic thing set up that when you start to find these red flag people, you put them into therapy, you get them help, you do whatever, you educate them, whatever it is. Like,
yeah,
do something that where you're not just, we're not always just reacting to the event after the fact.
Right.
You know, well, we're so reactionary.
That, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. We, you know, it's always seems to be after the effect, you know, something has happened and disaster has happened. And, you know, well, we're praying for, you know, for those, you know, that it's tough for me to say because, you know, praying afterwards, I don't know if that works.
Yeah. I mean, it just, that gets lost and it sounds empty after a while, the like thoughts and prayers, you know, like great. That does nothing.
I'm praying for their families and, you know, hoping, you know, they're able, you know, to, you know, to, you know, to somehow come to grips with it, and, you know, but you never do.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a great line that, you know, about, you know, a friend passing. And he says, you know, that time heals everything. And the answer was time. It really doesn't. He says, you just get through it.
You just get further away from it.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, to, you know, and something that, you know, that I've gone through, you know, everybody's gone through something like that in their family. But even, you know, the last number of months with me, you know, time doesn't make it better. You just get through it. And man, oh man, but, you know, my heart goes out to them because, you know, people looking to have fun, you know, on the Chinese New Year and to go to a dance club and, you know, and to, right, to do something that they love to do and then to, you know, fall into something like that and to be a part of something like that. Whoa. Well, yeah. It's heartbreaking. And, you know, my heart goes out to them anyway,
yeah.
I'm sorry to bring that up, but, you know, let's talk a little bit about AO.
You want to go down under? Yeah, that's enough of that. Sad. It's hitting a little too close to home. And
sad.
But yeah, let's talk some tennis. Down under. I don't want to date it too much because this will come out and they will be the finals will be set. But we'll talk. The semis are set. Sabalenka, our girl, hasn't lost a set this year.
How good is that?
This year. She won her first tournament lead up and now is just plowing through the field after beating Vekic 2-3. Who else did she beat? She beat Bencic 5-2. I mean, she's just, you know, whoever is there, she'll beat. Plays Magda Linette, kind of the wild card of the women's side here, Final Four. She's been on a good run. She beat Pliskova. She beat Garcia, who was a big, everyone thought kind of maybe have a chance to make a run here. On the other side, Wimbledon champion, Elena Rybakina. Rybakina, I don't know if I'm saying one of those right, but she's a little low key. She, when she's playing well, she's a thumper. She takes the ball out of your hand, has a good serve, tall. You know, won Wimbledon, kind of nonchalantly accepted the trophy, didn't make a big deal out of it. She plays 2013 and 2014 AO champ Victoria Azarenka on the other side, making a return to the semifinals 10 years after she won here for the first time back in 2013. What do you think about the Final Four?
Yeah, Azarenka. I mean, you know, coming, you know, after, you know, everything she's been through since her last wins, you know, what, 10 years ago, the ups and downs and, you know, kids in the meantime and making a comeback. And, you know, I like stories like that, you know, because it goes to show that staying in there and grinding and believing and not being afraid to work, somehow, somewhere down the line, it pays off.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good sign, but you know, she's going up against some youth, you know, to win the tournament, she's in the semis, but she's going to have to beat, you know, some players that are on form and that are much younger. So, you know, she's got her work cut out for her, but what a story that would be.
Yeah.
You know, for her to come through and win that would be pretty spectacular.
Yeah, definitely. I like her story. Rybakina, it's going to be a tough match. I think it kind of comes down to Sabby and the winner of that Rybakina as a Azarenka match. And
didn't you have her as the finalist or the winner?
Sabby.
Before?
Yeah, we talked about her. We talked about wanting her to kind of step up and kind of take control of that number two spot. You know, Iga Swiatek, who lost a lot earlier than people thought in the fourth round. She lost to Rybakina. Rybakina just smoked her. I mean, she just hit her off the court, kind of. So, you know, even though she lost early, she has such a big lead in the points that we're waiting for someone to just be like, hey, look, like, okay, she's won maybe, but you someone should be like, look, the next spot up is three. And she's kind of doing that this year. She's taking care of her serve. She's not double faulting as much. I'm not losing a set through whatever it is, 10 matches so far. Yeah, I think she could be a prime candidate to, you know, I'd love to see her win the slam. If Azarenka doesn't win, I like Rybakina. If she's young, I think she'll have a lot of chances. I'd like to see Sabalenka win if Azarenka doesn't.
Then your pick would be Sabalenka, right?
Yeah,
that would be.
I think it's hard to bet against her the way she's playing right now. But I mean, you never know though. She's been to the semis before, and the stage was a little big, you know, and she hasn't come through and made a final yet. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, having someone like Lynette, where she's the favorite, instead of, you know, maybe a 50-50 coin flip, I think will be in her favor.
Do you think that's nerves though, Brett? She's gotten to the point where, you know, she has an opportunity. She's in the semis now to go on and have a chance to win this. Do you think it's nerves that have kept her from winning?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, anytime you have an issue with, you know, double faulting, you know what I mean? Like that's a little yippy. It's a little nervy, right? You know, like even like we talked about last time, like just get it in. Even if the other person rips a winner and makes you look bad, like at least it's not a double fault. At least they had to do something. You made them like take a swing. You made them risk a shot or whatever. But yeah, I think it's some nerves. But I think her, like she's going to look around and like she's the lowest seed. You know, Azarenka and Rybakina are like 22 and 24. Lynette's not even seeded. So I think in her other situations where she's made a quarter or a semi and a slam, she's looked around and there's been maybe higher seeds than her. Where she was, you know, there are bigger names there than her, you know, quote unquote. And maybe that was a little bit, you know, got in her nerves. But now when she's the favorite, we'll see how she handles that because, you know, that's a different set of pressure.
Well, it's going to be interesting because you got a couple of one timers that can come up and have their first slam.
Yep.
You know, so what an opportunity for them, but also Azarenka to rewrite the record books. How good would that be? It's been a while since she's won a major, and you know, for everything that she's been through to keep her game up there, it's going to be a very interesting weekend. Very interesting for the women.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let's go over to the men's side. Surprisingly, when we talked pre-tournament, we talked about a lot of Americans having a chance, both sides. Mm-hmm. But if we were to have guessed who would make a deeper run to the finals or semis here at the AO, I think we would have probably said it would be the women with Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula being top 5, 6, 7 seeds, whatever they are. And they both came up short. And surprisingly, it's the men who have come through with 3 quarterfinalists on the men's side, 1 semifinalist, Tommy Paul. We had Ben Shelton make the quarters. We also had Sebastian Corda. We talked about him a little bit on our preview show. Playing some amazing tennis, like losing in the final to Djokovic 2 weeks ago, where he had a match point. You know, he looked good coming into this tournament. He had a great 5-setter against Hubie Hurkacz, who's a Vantage Connors favorite. And then, the thing with him is he has injuries. You know, is he going to be able to sustain this level of play for over like a long period of time? And it caught up with him this tournament. You know, in only his second or third tournament of the year, he had to retire in the quarters against Khachanov. What do you think about that?
Well,
just tell me what you think about 3 Americans in the quarters overall.
I think that's great because it's new names. You know, it's not Sam Querrey and it's not the guys that we have been
talking about,
you know, for the last, 10 years or so?
Yeah.
You know, it's new names, which is, you know, for me, you know, that's the future of the game anyway. Yeah, you know, kids coming up in their early 20s and, you know, looking to try to take over. Now, you know, for Corda, you know, his dad was a player and he should know as well as anybody what it takes to be prime for the ones that, you know, really the most important. You know, unfortunately, I thought everyone was the most important. So I was prime for every match I ever played. But the Grand Slams are the ones that really catapults you to that next level. You know, so how do you stay healthy for that? You know, how do you work at your game so that you're peaking at the right time? And so that when you go in there, you know, you're not looking for form, you're in form and looking to get better every match and along the way over that 2-week period. You know, so we talked about that.
He kind of was.
But are
some guys just injury prone?
That was my next question to you.
I'm not saying that he is yet. I'm not, you know, he's only 22 years old, but I'm just saying like you're saying, you know, do everything in the off season, be in shape, get yourself ready for the new year, be in prime. He was like, I mean, he was playing like, he looked like a top 5 or 10 guy there in some of his matches this year. And then, you know, like all of a sudden his wrist just gives out against Kachanov and he has to retire in the third set, you know? And it's just,
I mean, you know, to me, it, you know, that's, it's very interesting to know. You know, and it's my next question is, how quick is he going to be able to come back from that?
Yeah.
You know, if all of a sudden, you know, he comes back and, you know, next week he's playing again, I want to say, whoa, you know, I you don't know how to think about that. But, you know, that, you know, injuries, you know, tennis is a rough game. You know, it's rough on you physically.
Especially
it's rough
on that wrist, on your forehand wrist.
Right. From top to bottom. Listen, I can talk about a wrist all day if you want me to. I blew mine out. I'll be happy to talk about that with you. But, you know, from top to bottom, you know, tennis, if you're giving it your all, like all these kids are out there, because I believe that they all know just how important it is and what it takes to be a great player and a champion and to fit in that category of an up-and-coming future champion and what that takes. So the push that they're giving themselves, you know, daily in their practice and in their in on the court and in their conditioning and everything. I mean, if they really want to be, then they're pushing and pushing and pushing, you know, to the brink.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the brink? You know, the brink is being able to push yourself so far to the point of which you are prime for the matches and the tournaments, but not worn out.
Mm-hmm.
So who does that? Who does that for you? You know, they've got 5 or 6 guys around them. You know, we talk about it all the time, Brett. You know, who knows just how much to push them and what it takes to get them to that level and to be able to hold that level for a grand slam. I look back and I think about this often because I go on my bike ride and I'm by myself. So sometimes useless crap goes through my mind, but that's one of them. You know, if who was pushing me, you know, who was guiding me, and who knew when I had enough? And there's really only one guy who does, and that's yourself. You know, and you know when to call it, because if not, you know, they'll say, you know, 10 minutes more, 15 minutes more, another 10 minutes on the jump rope, 20 minutes on the jump rope. You know, wait a minute. I got to be ready, you know, for my matches. I don't want to be worn out before my matches.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, I was pretty good at guiding myself, even though your grandma and Pancho were so good at knowing when to, you know, put the brakes on for me.
Yeah.
I was pretty good myself as saying, I got 5 more minutes. No, I'm done now. Yeah, you know, but, you know, now it's just, you know, with you know, it's worse so much.
But I think I think also you were good at saying, I need 10 more minutes. I can remember being on the practice court where I'd be like, are we going to go? Are we going to get a cheeseburger? And you'd be like, look, I need to do another 23. And then we need to play another set, you know, or whatever the thing was. You were good at seeing the times where, look, I'm not right yet. I haven't got what I need out of this day.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, nobody knows how far to push yourself than you.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what is coming from the sidelines is, you know, but the only thing is, you know, the main thought is never to push yourself too far.
Right.
So that you're not ready for the matches.
Yeah.
That you're worn out and burned out before the matches even come. And my thought was, is that it means so much now, you know, with the amount of money in the game and what titles mean and grand slams and what it does for you and you know, for your reputation and your legacy and in your career, you know, it means so much that these guys, I mean, and the ladies too, you know, both of them, they're willing to.
The whole game. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. There is so much pressure, especially now that the slams have this, you know, extra emphasis on it, you know, the last whatever 25 years. But yeah, the thing with Korda, he's going in the right direction. He came in as a 29 seed, makes the quarters, has to pull out. I mean, with the wrist, it's one of those things where it's, if it's iffy at all, you got to just pull the ripcord because it's like your wrist. It's this forehand wrist. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So yeah, you got, you know, sometimes, you know, it's better, you know, we talk about Federer never stopping in a match and, you know, completing every match. You know, sometimes it's better to pull the cord.
Yeah. I mean, if you got to do it, you got, especially if you're 22. You're 22, right. You got 10-year career at least ahead of you. But let's move on from quarter.
And by the way, I'm a fan.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I like watching him play. He's got a really good backhand. He's got a good, pretty well balanced game for being 22. And he's got the, you know, the power strokes and the smarts. I think having a dad who was a player, he probably has a pretty good tennis IQ for being only 22 years old.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Right. I'm rooting for him. But, you know, I kind of went off on a tangent there, and I'm sorry. But, you know, I'm kind of good at that lately.
It's all right. We got more that I can talk to you about. Talk to me about the other half. Just quickly, two Americans, Tommy Paul, who over the last 3 years has transformed from someone who had a lot of talent and was really athletic, but kind of would go out there and just maybe slap balls around and show potential, but not be able to put it together, you know, for back-to-back matches a lot, to being a dude who's a contender. You know, he's in the semis. He plays Joker in the bottom half after beating Ben Shelton, who I want to get your opinion on too. But talk to me about those two guys. Ben Shelton, the 20-year-old, he's only played two or three tournaments on tour. He went to the University of Florida. His dad was the coach, Brian Shelton, who used to play on the tour. Talk to me a little bit about seeing some new young Americans making a deep run in the slam.
Yeah, how good is that? I mean, every podcast we've had over the last 4 years has been, you know, when are these young Americans going to start stepping up? And now we have it. And for them to, you know, to start finding their way and to get their footing and, you know, going to the University of Florida and getting that competition. I go back, you know, when I was 17 or 18 and I was in the juniors and then I made that transition from the juniors into college tennis. I went to UCLA for the 1 year and to be able to play against that competition, it's just a different level. And you learn so much, you know, from that graduation from, you know, the 18 and unders to the college ranks and the competition, and you're playing against guys that are 3 and 4 years older than you. So it kind of grooms you.
Yeah.
And plus his dad, you know, being around the game and the career that he had is able to inject some of that experience into him and what it takes and what he needs to do. And, you know, sometimes all you have to do is listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, listen a little bit, because if you trust it, and I keep going back to this, and tell me if I'm repeating myself, because I know I am. Your grandmother and Pancho, I trusted them that they would never say one thing that wasn't going to help me, that wasn't going to make my game better and to make me better. So if you trust that and you're able to take that into your matches and to do it, it's only going to make you better. You know, so that experience for somebody who's been there is so important. But the younger players that are coming up now in the state, in the women and the men's, it creates much more excitement. You know, that, you know, a lot of guys, you know, and I was one of them. You get to a certain point where, you know, everybody says you've had your time. you know, time you move over. Yeah. Time to move on. It's time for you to do other things. You know, you had a good career, a great career, or whatever, but you know, figure something else out. It's my turn now. And it seems like these young American men and women are starting to figure that out. And it's really exciting.
Definitely. One note on Paul before we talk about Shelton is the one thing I liked was that when they asked him afterwards, you know, who do you want to play, Rublev or Djokovic or something about something like that? He said, well, I saw Djokovic was up 5-1 in the first and, you know, I'd love to play Djokovic. You know, like he wants the match. He wants the challenge of playing the best player in the world. And I thought that was a good sign, even though he's a plus 1200 favorite on the money line against Joker, who looks pretty unstoppable right now. But one note on Shelton that I think you might have a good note or two on that I want to ask you. The thing about Shelton that I think has surprised everybody, including him and his dad and everybody who knows him and has followed him, is how quickly his game is like, boom, clicking on the tour. You know, like it's literally, I think it's his second tournament and he made a quarterfinal. He went 4 with Paul. Like it was there was a time where it looked like he might, you know, push it to a fifth. And so when he won the NCAAs, I think he went 2 years to Florida. You went 1 year to UCLA. You won the NCAAs. And then you went pro. And then, were you surprised when you went pro how quickly you were able to start getting like wins on tour? You know, like coming from college, were you like, oh shit, like I'm, you know, I'm better than I even thought I was a little bit, you know, kind of like we're all thinking with Shelton?
No, I think the experience that he has gotten, because I'm going to go back to the NCAAs, Brett. The NCAAs was probably the toughest tournament I've ever played in. Yeah, and you know, playing the amount of matches, I played singles and doubles. I played doubles with my friend Jeff Austin, and you know, playing singles and doubles, you're playing 2, maybe 3 matches a day. You know, and that experience and you know that conditioning, and you figure out so much in that time what is necessary for you to make that next transition into the pros. So you know, obviously, he's learned well. You know, to take that and to use that. Yeah, to help him go to that next level.
I mean, like, you know, like, were you, like, when you were coming out of college, did you know for sure, like, I belong on the tour? Were there some questions, like, or doubts, like, do I belong? Am I good enough? You know, like, and then when you got there, because I'm sure there's got to be a little of that because you don't know. Like, you're going to playing challenger events. It's like, they didn't even have those back then. So you're only just playing the people in your area and stuff. And you know, big events like the Orange Bowl and the NCAAs. I just think the thing with Shelton was, I don't think anyone thought like he would just drop in and be boom quarterfinalist right away. You know?
No.
Were you surprised at yourself or at like how well your game was ready for the tour when you know after you went pro from college?
Well, the summer after my first year of college, I had a very successful summer, and I think I made over the summer, I think I made like $50,000 and. And I, as an amateur, I wasn't able to take it. So, you know, I went and I called, your grandma and I said, listen, I made 50 grand over the summer. I said, do you know how much money that is?
Yeah.
I said, I can't afford not to do this. And she says, education. and I said, okay. And then I went for a quarter and I was getting bigger. I was getting stronger. And my coach at UCLA, Glenn Bassett, was a master at getting us in the best conditioning possible. And so my game was getting better and my conditioning was getting better. And when I decided to turn pro, I said, if I'm not ready now, I'll never be. And I know I've told you this story and one of our great friends, Lloyd Bridges, was such a great friend of ours and our families. And he told me at the time that he says, Jimmy, he says, you got to strike while the iron's hot. He says, if you think that you can go in there and you have any chance to do it, you got to do it now because you'll look back and you'll regret it the rest of your life. And when he told me that, the toughest call I had to make after that conversation with him was to your grandma, because I said, I'm turning pro. And she says, whoa, she goes, I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not. I said, I got to do it. I said, I said, I could always go back to college. I can always do that if this doesn't work out. And, you know, thank goodness it worked out because, you know, college wasn't for me. But, you know, once you get that feel of yourself and what you think you can do and what you're capable of, there's really, if you're willing to work at it, and as we've talked many times, you know, this is a, you know, 365 day a year job. If you're willing to give it that kind of effort, there's no stopping you. You know, it just depends what level you set your sights on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to set your sights on the top 30 or the top 20 or the top 10, you know, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the best since I was a kid. You know, whether it works out or not, listen, it turns out to be there's only one best. Mm-hmm. There's only one number one. You know, and there's so many great players that never reached that, you know, but at least they went out and did, you know, and did everything they could to make that possible.
Yep.
And that's the way I felt. That's the way I felt. I'll do anything I can to give myself a chance to be the best.
Right. Yeah, I think Sheldon's got a good career ahead of him. I think he's going to be top 50 now when the new rankings come out next week. And I like that he's a lefty. He's got a good serve,
yeah.
And you know, he's fun to watch. He has like different kind of shots, and he's really, really athletic and moves around the court quickly. Paul too, man. Paul's was ranked 35 coming into this, so I'm sure making the semi is going to put him top 20 at least, top 15 even maybe.
What do you think that would do for him if he beats Djokovic tomorrow in the next couple of days? My God!
Right. Another level.
It's a career maker.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If he could beat Joker in the semis to make a final, I mean, yeah. And then he would have you'd have to say at least he'd have a chance against Tsitsipas or Khachanov. I mean, right. Tsitsipas a little under the radar this week. He plays well in Australia. Like, I think this is his third semifinal down under. He plays Khachi on the one side. Paul plays Joker. Joker looks like he's just on a mission. The revenge tour continues. I mean, he's handling it with some class, man. I got to say, after how he was treated last year, thought this was interesting. He pulled Demonauer, the Australian, in the fourth round and went ahead and dispatched of him 2-1 and 2. And I think Courier mm-hmm. asked him in the press conference after, or like, you know, why did you beat him so like badly or something like that? And Joker just said, because I wanted to.
Right.
And it's funny because Demonauer was pretty opinionated about a year ago on the subject of Joker and the visa and the coming into the country and all that stuff. So I just think Joker might've taken some mental notes over the last mm-hmm. year. And there might be some more of those matches lined up for the rest of the seasons for people who had some stuff to say. But what do you think? Who do you like in those semis? Yeah, Khachi sits. Khachi making his second semifinal in a row at a slam. I kind of think he talked about getting lost in the shuffle. I mean, I kind of think everyone thought he was just, you know, this one player. He's a top 25 guy, but he's not a top 10 guy. But now two straight semifinals, and that's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. So plus 1,200, you know, how can you not put $10 on him?
That's Paul.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, on Paul. But on the other hand, you're right. I think Joker's on a mission, and he wants to win this tournament, start off his year with a Grand Slam win. So I would like to see a good match that Paul puts up. And, you know, if he wins, maybe even better. But you know, go out there and play with no fear.
Right. He's playing with house money.
Right. And you know, you're playing against, you know, probably the number one player in the world, you know, and has a record to show it. Go out there and play with no fear and say, this is an opportunity for me. I'm giving it everything I have, win, lose, or draw.
Right.
You know, and then on the other side, you know, our guy, Tsitsipas, you know, I kind of don't know how to take him sometimes. I mean, he rises and then you don't see him for a while. But I think that he's going to get through this. I know it's not going to be an easy semifinals with playing Khachanov, but I think he's going to get through it, and it's going to be a Djokovic-Tsitsipas final.
I like that. I think that would be a kind of maybe the best matchup possible. But yeah, with Paul, like, dude, it's all gravy at this point. You're in your first semifinal. You're playing the number one player in the world, you know, maybe the number one player of all time. If he wins this slam, he'll be tied with Rafa for 22. And then on the other side, Catchy, I feel like, is a little bit, is he's kind of playing with house money, you know, like no one kind of expects him. He's the Russian guy. They're asking him these stupid bullshit Russia-Ukraine questions that he handles really well. And, you know, and everyone thinks Sitsy, and Sitsy gives the great answers, and, you know, on press, and Catchy a little under the radar. I don't know. But Sitsy minus 255, definitely the favorite going in. I think a Joker Sitsy final would be a fun one. So, yeah, who do you got winning all of it?
I mean, how can you not think that Djokovic is going to come through and win it? You know, you said it, he's on a mission.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, you know, looking to get even is just that little extra push.
Yeah.
They cost him last year, you know, by not letting him in. And, you know, and then he goes on and wins Wimbledon and, you know, has a great rest of the year. So I think he's on a mission. He wants to win that. He wants to have another opportunity to win the Grand Slam. And there's only one way to start that, and that's at the Australian.
Yep. I agree. Moving on, we'll wrap up our Australian Open next week, see how everyone does. But Sabalenka and Djokovic seem to be the picks here on the show. We'll see how those turn out. One last thing before we wrap for today. We don't want to go too long, but one story in the golf world that caught my eye today that I got to get your take on. Did you see the story between Rory McIlroy and Patrick Reed?
I did.
Teagate, I guess is what we're calling it. So I'll give you the quick rundown. Patrick Reed is a player who left the PGA Tour last year for the LIV Tour. Rory plays on the PGA Tour. I guess they're playing at an event in Saudi Arabia or Abu Dhabi this week. So they're at the same event, one of the first times in a while. Patrick Reed, over the years, has garnered a reputation for, let's say, trying to bend the rules out there on the golf course. If you want to Google YouTube, there's plenty of evidence of him doing suspect things on the course. I'm not going to say anything else because he might try and sue me, because that is what he did to Rory McIlroy. He had Rory McIlroy served with papers on Christmas Day for some lawsuit, I guess, alleging defamation or something along those lines. I guess Rory had said some comments about him maybe being not so good with the rules. And anyway, so what happened today was Reed walked up to Rory on the practice green. Rory's like bending over, tying his shoe. He walks up to his caddy. Rory's caddy shakes Reed's hand. Reed tries to talk to Rory. Rory ignores him because, hey, this guy's like suing me. I don't want to talk to you. Reed gets butthurt, turns around to walk away, and then turns back around and flicks a tee at Rory. One single tee out of his pocket. He just like tosses it at Rory and then walks away. All right. Give me your take.
Yeah. Well, listen, anything to show me some excitement. Come on. You know, and like it or not, you know, listen, a lot of guys in the tennis didn't get along either, you know, but it created great rivalries and extra interest in, you know, what's going on besides just hitting a golf ball or hitting a tennis ball. And you know, everybody's going to try to poo-poo it and say, you know, oh, well, that shouldn't happen. You know, this is golf and, you know, all that. Christ, you know, it's competition, you know, and. You know, going out and trying to be the best and work at what you're doing and try to, you know, get on top, you know, and all that,
I think it's great though, in a way, because I think at some point down the line, there has to be some sort of LIV versus PGA or some sort of event where these guys can go back and forth at each other. They can play each other again, you know, and these little subplots, these little stupid little stories that bubble up that become like a story are great, because when they play each other in the event, if it ever happens, we can like play this footage back and be like, remember last time they saw each other, he flicked a tee at him on the practice screen, you know?
but isn't that going to be something that this is going to create more interest in?
Definitely. I think it's good. I think that's a good thing.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
You know that, you know, can you imagine if LIV golf goes against the PGA and Reed plays McIlroy?
Right.
Know, I'm watching that.
Right. I mean, like it was a Wednesday. I was scrolling through the stuff. I don't like follow the PGA super, super close. I watch it on the weekends and stuff, but that caught my eye. And here we are talking about it. So like, it's a good thing kind of for the sport because it pulls eyeballs and it creates like storylines that we can, you know, reference back to if they ever play again.
Right. And believe me, I think that there is going to be a way that eventually, I mean, some of the LIV players are going to be able to play some of the other events too. So, I that's my take on it. Is that not right?
Yeah, they're going to be able to play the majors, I think, together. And then I just hope someday there's some sort of like crossover something, you know, just because the one tour has lost so much talent. So there's like this amazing amount of talent on the other tour on LIV. You can't say there isn't. They got Cameron Smith and Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed, you know?
Right.
So I just think it's a funny story. And Rory has become this like lightning rod for all this shit where he talks about the LIV tour. And then he's got this thing with Reed and it's just like, everything keeps coming around Rory. So I think it's like the drama is fun to watch.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting too, because, you know, Rory's still young, right?
Yeah.
And still at the top of his game and winning PGA Tour events and looking for majors and all that. It's going to be interesting down the road if the LIV tour continues and gets stronger. If one day he doesn't pop up himself and say, well, I can't win the Masters or the US Open anymore. Maybe I'll go over to the LIV tour.
Mm-hmm. He's 33 years old. And the part that'll make you sick, he's 5'9", and he hits the ball further than people who are 6'10". It's only 5'9", it says. It's crazy, dude. That's good as he hits it.
Geez, I'm 5'9", and I get 217 and a half.
That's good, though. That's good.
That's okay for me.
That's down the middle every time.
Yeah.
Down the middle, Rory.
I'm in the short grass. I am in the short grass. That's a good thing.
You drove it well off 10 at Augusta. That's all I know.
Yep. Oh, boy. Oh, my.
All right. Well, love to see that, see how it plays out. Any last thoughts? I'm ready to take the Golden Doodle out for her walk. She's sitting here looking at me.
I've had a good day. I've had a long day. I got to play a little golf, but we've got a few cars that have had some problems, and I've gotten those fixed. And so I'm looking forward to getting those, back in the driveway tomorrow so we can be able to get around a little bit. And it's been a good couple of days. I miss you. I know you've been working and Melina and the Golden Doodle are down there taking care of you. But don't forget to send in some for all our listeners out there. You know, follow us on Facebook and send us some questions. We love hearing from you. And you can follow me on at Jimmy Connors on Twitter, at ADV Connors, at Advantage Connors.
All that good stuff. That's all. You got it. You got it. I love it. Give everyone up there my love. How the golf course looking after the rains? Are they playing okay?
It's carts the first day today. It was good. We got to use the carts. So it was a little easier on us. But, three weeks off and my swing showed it. So I got to get back on the range a little bit.
Yeah.
Love being with you tonight, son. I miss you and I love you. And you take care of everything down there. I look forward to seeing you soon.
I will. I love you too. I saw somebody posted that at the river course took some damage out there. The river that runs through there took a little heat. So they need to do some repairs. But we'll get out there when it's all good. And I'll see you soon. I love you. And we'll talk to everyone next week. Peace.